Today on Vox Talks Economics, where did all this inflation come from? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember to subscribe. And when you have subscribed, give us a review as well. 5 stars is best. Why is inflation so high? Ricardo Reyes of the London School of Economics can explain how and why we got here, because that's the title of his new CEPR discussion paper that examines the mistakes that policymakers might have made in the last 2 years and whether they could have done better. He was recently giving a speech on exactly this topic at the German Ministry of Finance, so I caught up with him there. And the first thing I asked him was, considering how many years we've spent worrying about the potential problems of deflation, did he ever think we would be having this conversation?
Well, I think the context, as you point, is very important, also to understand why it did happen. We arrived in 2021 at a point where in most advanced economies, and by that I really mean most, almost entirely the OECD, we had had 20 to 30 years of extremely stable inflation. And Tim, it's important to emphasize the extremely. The variance of inflation around a mean of 2% was the lowest we had seen across all monetary regimes that had come before and all different monetary experiments that we had had. Now, that stability came associated across all of these countries with a particular combination of monetary policy regime, one that relied on independent central banks with inflation targets setting interest rates. I think most academics and many scientists looking at this question of why did we have such low inflation ended up concluding that it was a victory for monetary policy, a victory for this institutional arrangement of independent central banks with inflation targets setting interest rates. Therefore, having experienced the victory and having given the credit, I think, correctly to the monetary regime, it therefore follows that now that we are seeing a deviation from it, it says, let's start looking first at precisely what did the monetary policy not get right now? And that is the perspective that I take in this paper.
But given what you said, could we think about it another way in the long run, that the last 20 years was the exception to the rule and we just gone back to normal?
I think as a scientist, you can never really rule that out. It may just be that, like you said, it was an exception and the stars just aligned to deliver low inflation. I like to think instead of progress and of scientific progress, and in particular that in the same way that the Industrial Revolution led to a beginning of growth that proved not to be an exception, but rather 200 years of sustained growth. I also like to think that our knowledge in monetary affairs, our science of monetary policy contributed to figuring out how to control inflation 25 years ago. And therefore, this could be a persistent state if we avoid the mistakes of the past that may be happening now. And partly, I base this on the fact that we have many countries for which this works, but not all. In the last 20 years, we don't have just one data point. We have many data points of countries that experimented with independent central banks with inflation targeting control setting interest rates, and some that didn't. And it was the former that saw the low stable inflation, not the latter. Indeed, for instance, at the conference, we saw a paper on how Turkey did not do so, and they did not have the low and stable inflation. So I don't think it's just a pure fluke of 20 years that went well. It was only when we saw the policies that it did work. Now, does that mean that having those set of policies and good monetary policy is a sufficient condition? No, but it does seem that it is a necessary one.
Now, if you asked a taxi driver the question that we're asking here, why is inflation high? They'd say, well, there's a war, and so gas prices have gone up, and people got lots of free money during COVID. This isn't the sort of things that you're discussing in this paper, is it?
In a sense, those are correct, but also very limited. Some shocks hit the economy, and the ones you pointed to are some of the more notable ones. However, shocks hitting the economy trigger policy responses. And those responses can amplify shocks, attenuate them, or eliminate them, insofar as it eliminates their consequences in some domains relative to others. Yes, absolutely, I can look at the last 12 months and point to shocks that raise inflation. But Tim, I could do that very often over the last 20 years. Let's not think that the last 20 years were some sea of tranquility. We had a global financial crisis. We had recessions here and there. We've had very large shocks to the credibility of the central bank. Oil shocks, very large increase in commodity prices. The increase in energy is large, but not so large. But we've had larger ones, say in 2010-11. We had sovereign debt crisis. And yet through all of this, inflation stayed stable. Why? I like to think because central banks responded to these shocks and were able to keep inflation somewhat stable. Whereas in this time around, the response was maybe not as good.
Right. So now you raise four factors in this paper. Let's have a look at those. The first one is the COVID bounce back after a lot of money was given out to try and stop economies crashing. Then their economies perhaps recovered quicker than people were expecting?
There was a starting point. I think in 2020, there was a very legitimate and correct fear that the COVID recession would be prolonged and would come with not just low inflation, but even a bout of persistent deflation. Central banks correctly implemented and announced very stimulative measures in monetary policy in 2020. As in 2021, it turned out that the economy bounced back very quickly. Those should have been taken back or at least started being removed. And yet central banks in 2021 were very afraid, very slow to go back on promises of 2020 by simply not being able to acknowledge or willing to acknowledge that the world had changed and therefore not so much more stimulus was in at that point. That in turn, Tim, came followed by the issues in the supply side because of problems in transport and supply chains. We had the issues with lack of labor supply in some countries having to do with long-lasting effects of COVID and migration, as well as, of course, the energy costs, all of which were a series of shocks, all of which pushed inflation up, and all of which met central banks saying, I'm going to keep monetary policy extremely stimulative because I promised to do so in 2020 without saying instead, well, given these shocks, it's time to start hiking rates. And hiking rates, they should have as early as the fall or the winter of 2021.
But is that entirely fair, Ricardo? Because I remember at the time, we didn't really know very much about whether COVID was coming back, for example. There didn't seem to be very many people calling for the stimulus to be called off.
It's certainly the case that hindsight is 2020. And again, if one were to look back now with insight, maybe we shouldn't have done so much stimulus in late 2020 or early 2021. But the criticism that's being raised here, Tim, is to the end of 2021. We're talking here about the winter of 2021. We're talking here about September to December of 2021. By then, Tim, unemployment rate in the US, in the euro area, in the UK, was on the fall and already reaching historically minimal levels. At the same time, we had inflation starting to shoot up. And shot up it did, and more. At some point, you have to say, look, if unemployment is falling, if inflation is rising, and expectations are rising as well, there's enough signs. It's not just about forecasting the next 6 months. In December of 2021, Tim, there was already an inflation that was very elevated across the Eurozone, the UK, the US, Canada. Already an unemployment rate that was very low, that even if you had a very pessimistic view of COVID coming back later in that winter or the spring, remember, monetary policy back then was at the absolute limit of how stimulative it would be. You couldn't be more stimulative. So again, hiking interest rates then, even at the level of there now, this is just being a little less stimulative. We're not even at the point of being restrictive or contractionary.
Check out these two episodes on inflation from our Paris Symposium. We spoke to Shebnem Kalimli-Ashkan on the topic of curing COVID inflation, and also to Agnes Benassi-Kayre and Giancarlo Corsetti about inflation in Europe's public finances.
Now, your second point is about the expectations of inflation. But again, expectations have been pretty well anchored around 2% until recently, haven't they? A lot of people thought that this inflation was very transitory. So what's your point here? How did this contribute to inflation rising so high?
So the theoretical conceptual point is that a series of indeed temporary transitory shocks, and we've already talked about them, given that monetary policy works with some lags, takes some time to have its effect, should to the first approximation be something that central bank can't do much about. However, insofar as those shocks affect expectations, that is the vehicle, the channel through which they become persistent and they start having a persistent effect on inflation. Well, that is precisely what happened. And if you look back, Tim, I would disagree with the observation that expectations were very anchored. Rather, when we look 12 months ago, and I was on the record saying that and being very critical all the way at the end of last summer to policymakers that were giving speeches saying expectations are very well anchored, that if you look at different measures, You could see some where it seemed like things were very well anchored as before, and you could see others where you could see some signs of de-anchoring. Yeah. A prudent policy making, knowing that expectations are what will lead to persistent, would, in my view, have been much more worried 12 months ago than they were. And again, would have started hiking rates 12 or 9 months ago. Look at the surveys of households. You could see already starting last summer that a beginning of an anchoring there a little bit. In the short, in the horizon of 1 and 2 years, you could start seeing it. When we say that expectations were anchored, it was after being selective of which series to look at, one, mm-hmm. and two, looking at much longer horizons. And that leads us to my third point, which is at a longer horizons, we're really not talking about expectations. We're talking about something else, credibility.
So what about credibility? How do we define credibility here?
Expectations would be about over the next year or two, do I think that inflation is going to persist higher? And because I think it's going to be higher, I ask for higher prices, I ask for higher wages, and it becomes persistence indeed for the next 2 years. Credibility is different. Is whether I think that in 2 years or in 3 years' time, will the central bank deliver its 2%? I may expect it to be more persistent, less persistent, more expectations, it takes more hikes, less hikes, but will it go back to 2%? If we believe that that is the case, then the consequence is that there will be an extremely strong force pushing inflation to be 2%. And secondly, that the action of the central bank mostly will work through boosting the economy or contracting it, if you want effects on real activity, on output and employment, but less on inflation. You will enjoy what economists call a favorable Phillips curve. Mm-hmm. Once you start losing some credibility, though, the Phillips curve really turns to you on a vengeance, becomes an unfavorable Phillips curve, and everything you do in terms of policy becomes about inflation with very little about unemployment. Now, starting backwards, what do you see in the last 12 months? Very loose monetary policy. And has unemployment fell precipitously? Mm-hmm. No, it's been very stable, falling a little bit, whereas inflation has increased a lot. It seems like we're facing a very unfavorable Phillips curve in the last 12 months and it's going to persist. And now moving backwards then to, do we see some hints of lack of credibility? Here, less so than in the expectations, for the most part, still people believe that the central bank, the ECB, the Bank of England will deliver. But you already see, and I had done some research, also the CPR working paper on inflation disasters with Jens Hilscher and Laurent Raviv, showing that if you look at options at insurance prices, say, it used to be that 3 years ago, you went and tried to buy some insurance against inflation getting out of hand 5 years from now, and the price was essentially zero because it was seen by the financial institutions selling that insurance as a completely unlikely event. Mm-hmm. And now, if you look at the prices being paid, and by now I mean as of January 2022, people are starting to quote you a price and a high price, and that price that involves an implicit probability of something like 10% that we will get out of hand. So there is a little bit of a loss of credibility. You see it through these insurance prices, and you see it also through the very steep or unfavorable Phillips curve that has happened. I think turning back to, again, the point of my paper, you can point the finger a little bit at central banks who only started talking tough about inflation, acting tough about inflation late on. If they had started earlier, that credibility, I think, would not have been lost, but they lost some of it. I think in the last few months, you see a remarkably good job, especially at the Federal Reserve, of regaining that credibility in terms of actions and words. Mm-hmm. And by the way, these insurance prices, Tim, that I was telling you, are falling like a rock in the last 2 months. Credibility seems to be regained. It contributed to the last 12 months, but I hope will not contribute to any more inflation in the next 24 months.
And to be clear, that credibility, that has to be established with the financial sector. It's not really something that we're talking to consumers about. They don't think very much about inflation.
Absolutely. I think if you look at countries with very high inflation or even hyperinflation, then yes, this will show up even with consumers. But if that happens, it's already a battle lost. Right now, when we talk about that credibility, you're talking about risk premium you see in assets, insurance premium against risk of high inflation, and how that affects economic activity.
And our final point is back to our last conversation, the neutral rate of interest. Okay, you're going to have to remind me again.
So I think the neutral rate of interest, or its long-run variant, sometimes called R-star, is seen as the interest rate that will equilibrate investment and savings in the long run in real terms. It is ultimately the interest rate that central banks have to be tracking in setting their own policy rates, because there's going to be a strong link between the way they set their policy rates, what that R-star is, and what inflation ends up being. Now, over the last 20 years, there's been a identified by research decline to that R-star, many good theories about it, and many measurements having to do with using especially government bond rates showing that it has declined. I think there's clear evidence that there has been a decline in that R-star. And that evidence inspired, justified, emission review by central banks, both the Fed and ECB in 2020, 2021, where they said, well, if I think that our star has indeed fallen a lot and persistently, I really want to worry about one, deflation, because I really worry that I can't lower my interest rates much more from that benchmark in a way that will allow me to stimulate inflation. So I start worrying a lot about deflation. Number two, I worry a lot about creating monetary policy tools that allow me to stimulate more and push for inflation, because I think the interest rate is going to run out. And three, I think that aggregate demand stimulus, deficits, cutting interest rates, has a very big kick on output. Those are very much present in these mission reviews. They're all about designing tools to stimulate more, central banks encouraging fiscal deficits. They're about fearing deflation. I think this is all very reasonable. This is all very legitimate. But you have to be careful with not becoming overconfident about that evidence. Because there are many interest rates in the world. There's many forms of investment. There's many forms of savings. And the last 20 years are as much marked by a fall in the R-star in government bonds as they are by the fact that the R-star, the return on the private economy across financial assets, across sectors, across investments, has fallen either not at all or very little. That is, that a big feature of the last 20 years is how government bonds have become very special. Special by being a very safe asset, by being a great store of value, by being a great form of collateral used in financial transactions. Therefore, driving a very large wedge between the two R-stars that I've mentioned, or even between multiple R-stars in the economy. What that means is that you have to not embrace those lessons that I said in the mission review too strongly. Because it may turn out that these R-stars can shift if you have a change in the specialness of government bonds. Well, I think with COVID and the very large increase in public debt, as well as followed by the energy crisis and the demands that's putting in public budgets, what you have precisely is that these R-stars are moving much faster than you
think. This is what we're saying. This is exactly what we're saying.
And as these R-stars are moving more than what you think, you have to, as opposed to being so committed to fighting deflation, more deficits, more inflation stimulus, realize that very quickly these things can switch and you may end up fighting inflation again and worrying about deficits being too high and worrying about how to bring inflation down. What I argue is that in 2021, we were holding on too much to the low R-star view of the world. I don't want to say that that's a wrong view of the world. I want to say that it's a view of the world that you don't want to embrace too quickly. And that contributed to very dovish central banking over 2022 that only over the last few months has started reverting. The central banks have started realizing that high inflation is as much or more of a danger than the deflation they worried about 18 months ago.
So, Ricardo, four suspects. Which one do you think's guilty?
Oh, I think it's really a combination of all four of them. And hopefully I transmitted this in this interview, that they're really interconnected. It is the unusual shocks that lead to the expectations drifting, partly through bad luck. And those lead to a more persistent effect. That starts putting some doubts on your credibility. And on top of it, you respond to those doubts of credibility by being so focused on deflation so as to miss the danger on inflation. And so I think all four of them really contribute together. Let me emphasize again, it is because central banks deserve so much credit for 25 years of low inflation that I think it is fair to point to the mistakes done in the last year so that, going back to the first question in this interview, we can fix these mistakes, because all four mistakes I pointed to are really mistakes of circumstance, of operation, of some bad judgments and bad steps that can be easily fixed. And if so, that we can return to the next 20 years and that hopefully I can be proven right in the challenge you put to me in that this has not been a fluke, but rather it has been good monetary policy. At the same time, Tim, there are dangers.
But you're saying the framework's still okay. Some of the decision making was less than optimal.
Completely agree. And I think the decision making right now in the last couple of months has already been back to optimal, by the way. So we're already being backward looking. I think presently decision makers are already being very good. I hope we'll continue to be good as challenges and dominances emerge in the next 12 months. Mm-hmm. And if they are, I am optimistic that we'll be back to 2% inflation by 2024-25.
Well, that's a relief. Thank you very much, Ricardo.
Thank you for having me.
The paper is called The Burst of High Inflation in 2021-22. How and why did we get here? And the author, of course, Ricardo Reis. It is discussion paper 17514 at CPR.
Next time on Vox Talks Economics, how does trade policy affect competition?